So this class and the next two are really about personal development. And it starts with the idea of self-assessment. And the more I thought about it, depending on what your answer is to this question, you might think, well, I think this is kind of an irrelevant class, so to speak. But I'm hoping you kind of buy into the idea that this class and the next two after have a lot of value for any man in any circumstance, regardless of whether he develops into serving as an elder or not. There's something worthwhile here. But here's the basic question, and I'm interested in your opinion, but I want you to kind of state it with some biblical principles. Whether you remember where a passage is, you have a kind of a biblical idea in mind. Here's the question. Do you think spiritual leadership comes naturally, or is it a developed trait? I suppose you could also argue it's both, but I want to know, is spiritual development, can it be developed, or does it have to be just something that's kind of natural to the man? What's your thought? What's your support for whatever you're thinking?
If they were just natural, then God wouldn't have given us those traits to aspire to.
Okay. So where is something that talks about us aspiring to, and what are the traits you have in mind there?
Well, I guess I was thinking more of just your general qualifications of character descriptions of elders.
Okay, so what are some of those qualifications? Because I think that's kind of the key to begin to get to the heart of this question. Is it, you know, drive and force and organizational and technical skills, and what are those character traits that are in those qualifications? Can you name some of them?
Temperate, sober-minded.
Yeah, I think actually in this lesson that you have in front of you is the list of those, right? Not violent. There's a bunch of nots too. Not quarrelsome. Not this. Not that. Is everybody naturally that way? Do you think some people are more naturally quarrelsome than others? Do you think they have to work on it to become not quarrelsome? But isn't there an expectation that you would work toward that? Okay. What else? What else would you say about this question?
Could be way off, but the picture I have of Timothy inherently is that he's not someone who's seems to be a little timid, I guess. Maybe that's because of what he was going through, but yet Paul tells him you need to do these certain things, right, all through both of those letters, despite maybe his personality was one of wasn't natural, but still he had these things to do.
So if he's expected to do them despite that, are some of those things perhaps something he could learn, he could develop into, become? In fact, what is he told in the fourth chapter? Isn't it 1 Timothy 4? I'm making this up as I go along. Isn't there something in that chapter about him developing, and then whatever he developed, he would try to pass on to others and all? Look at verse 15. This is the authorized divine English Standard Version. Marty's not here. Practice these things. Immerse yourself in them so that all may see your progress. So it was the idea that Timothy, man, if you'd really put your mind and focus on this, you're going to change. You're going to progress in some way or another. That's good. Any other thoughts as far as whether this is...
For some reason, the first thing that popped into my head was David. Mm-hmm. And thinking more about it, it seems like if you could say anyone had natural leadership ability, it would be David. You know, he had that background of shepherding.
Yeah.
But even still, I would say any person in the Bible who's called by God, whether they were prepared for it or not beforehand, had to make the decision to, like, hang on to God's word from that point on. And especially I'm thinking about David fleeing from Saul for so long, and how much that wore him down and forced him to, you know, grow closer with God. And so he was developed.
Do you think he was a different leader at the end of that period of being forced through all those trials and
right.
so forth?
That's what I was thinking of. Even if he had natural aptitude, he was still developing through
yeah.
that.
Another perfect example of that is Moses. I mean, he says, "Oh, I don't speak eloquently, and who am I to even be mm-hmm. the person being put forward here?" But you know, to Ben's point there, like he did have that willingness to trust and obey God through that, and became this leader that he probably did not desire to be.
That's good. It's Santi, and then I mean, one more comment. We'll go a little further past this question.
Yeah. Peter came to my mind because he is an elder. He was an elder, and he, I mean, it seems like his life he has learned things the hard way a lot of times. And one of them even being what he writes in 1 Peter 5, where he says you ought to be examples to the flock. Mm-hmm. And in Acts 15, I mean, he's not really acted as an example
yeah.
to the flock.
Yes, listen, Peter, that's a good place from which to start. The idea here is spiritual leadership. How did Jesus define those who are leaders in the kingdom?
Yeah, servants.
They're servants of all. They're not like the way that the Gentiles rule and so forth. If we looked at it, I think perhaps I would think of Peter as being a natural leader. Doesn't he seem like of the group of 12, he just kind of rises right up to the top in almost every scene. He puts himself forward. He's got ideas. He's thinking ahead. You know, a lot of things that you might think of as being perhaps natural qualities of a leader. But is he really a spiritual leader? Are there not qualities and things that he needed to learn over a period of time? So part of this is to try to get us to help one another to do some assessment of our own abilities and weaknesses in light of what would be a true spiritual leader, not just kind of the natural leadership that the world thinks of. I wanted to just share with you real quickly something. I used to hand out sometimes this article that I've had forever and ever and ever. So in my job as a manager, I would want people to read this article about what makes a leader. It's about emotional intelligence. Can y'all see enough of these five categories down through here? So emotional intelligence is, I mean, somebody came up with the idea that you've got this typical idea of leadership where you need high intelligence and high technical skills. And so whatever the matter is, and then the rest of it is kind of force of character or force of personality upon people to make them follow after you. And this researcher said, you know, emotional intelligence, so I have to define it in a minute, is really a more effective method of leadership. Now, this is all from a worldly perspective. I don't really care whether emotional intelligence is a better leadership principle or not, unless it's inherent within this concept of spiritual leadership. Here are the five qualities, and as I've thought about them over the years, I feel like as a Christian, as a child of God, I really should be concerned about these things anyway. If I'm going to be a leader of others in a work environment or whatever, then the idea, first of all, of self-awareness, knowing one's emotions, strengths, weaknesses, drives, values, and goals, and their impact on others. Should a Christian know that? I think absolutely. We're going to look at some passages about self-awareness in a minute. How about self-regulation, controlling or redirecting disruptive emotions and impulses? Should I be able to control my emotions and impulses? Doesn't that sound like, what is it, self-control or temperate, you know, depending on your translation of the qualifications? Well, of course, you should do that. And then the idea of motivation. Now, this says being driven to achieve for the sake of achievement. That sounds real worldly. Until you look at the side, the hallmark of that, a passion for the work itself and for new challenges, unflagging energy to improve, optimism in the face of failure. If my cause is in line with the cause of Christ, would you not agree that trying to achieve the positive, you know, for the sake of that achievement, not for my own glory, but for the actual work itself, is worthwhile, and certainly a passion for that work is ought to be a hallmark. And optimism in the face of failure, we're going to keep on doing this no matter what happens because it's the right thing to do. I think that makes sense. And then the last two, empathy, considering others' feelings when making decisions. Should Christians ever do that? Should I ever take into account other people's feelings when I'm making decisions? Put the interests of others in front of you. You know, that's a Philippians 2 description there. And then finally, this social skills. Can't quite see this. Managing relationships to move people in desired directions. That's a lot of what we've been talking about here as shepherd of sheep. Trying to use your relationships to get people to do the right thing. You know, and so from my perspective, I think all five of these kind of make a lot of sense as far as that goes. But here's really the reason why I wanted to show this to you is in the middle of this article. This is a famous article, by the way. Page 12. Oh, there it is. He has this little side section in which he says, "Can emotional intelligence be learned?" So it's back to that question. If this is an effective way of leading others, can you learn it? Or do you have to be a natural born leader? And he draws the conclusion that yes, you can. Somewhere in here he makes that positive statement. But then he also says this. I thought this was interesting. One thing is certain. Emotional intelligence increases with age. I think there's a reason why God asks elders. You know, that it's not a novice, let's say, you know, be subject to these other things. I think that there is a lot to be said here about the idea that we can change. And so I think it's worthwhile. The article is not going to prove it to you. I hope the discussion we had earlier than that is really what proves it to you. All the passages you mentioned and the example of those who have changed along the way. All right, so let's go back to this. Any questions or extra thoughts about all that? Okay, here we go. All right, so we're again kind of working on our preparation, but now it's a little more personal preparation. And some things you kind of have to do on your own, thinking things through. Where are you? How can we improve some of the things that we need to do in order to begin to grow. So tonight, talking about self-assessment and an initial development of a personal plan. And then the next two after this. Does everybody have a copy of Lesson 5? And that one actually is multiple classes, so it's deserving of the word classes. Classes 10 and 11. Let's look at these passages for a minute. I don't want to show it to you because I highlighted part of it, but open your Bibles, look at Romans 12, 1 through 3. What did you see in there that seemed to have something about self-development? I'm sorry, self-assessment. I always thought that's such a worldly kind of thing. Is that really a biblical concept? Assess yourself. What do you see in there?
It's not to think more highly of yourself.
So what does that imply? If I'm not supposed to think of myself more highly than I should, what?
Tendency that you should, that you would.
Yeah, first of all, I'm susceptible to being self-deluded, right? Thinking of myself as more capable, better than maybe what I am. What else is implied in that, you think, that idea?
That you think of yourself.
Yeah, that you should think of yourself. Anything else?
That you've been born with some level of ability here, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned.
Yeah, so it actually, interestingly, if you kept on reading through the rest of the chapter here in chapter 12, there's a lot of skills and things that it's talking about, and it's kind of an expectation that you would figure out what you are particularly good at and be sure that you use that ability and skill that you have. We're going to talk about trying to develop more of those, but it's got that idea in mind. There's a couple of things here. First of all, in verse 2, the idea that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. So I'm thinking the standard I'm going to kind of judge where I am is based off of an understanding of God's will, but there's this expectation that I'll be able to discern or understand something. And then it goes on in verse 3 to talk about not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but how to think. What way? Not higher than I really am, but how?
Sober
judgment. And of course, we think immediately sober is like, I'm not drunk. But the idea of sober here is sound thinking. It's accurate. I've got a clear view of my own abilities and my own weaknesses. And so it's a sound judgment in regard to myself. I don't know how you would define self-assessment more than what Romans 12 seems to be talking about. And whoever pointed out the... I guess it was you, Daniel. There are other things he talks about here. The things that have been assigned are skills that we should be aware of. All right, turn over to Galatians 6, 3 through 4. Just need to think about that one. What do you see here that would suggest that a person ought to be careful, ought to be able to know their strengths, their weaknesses, a little self-assessment?
Test themselves.
All right, so there's this testing again. I'm going to measure my work against something. I think that's the idea of testing. See, how have I done before? I'm measuring my effort something. Learning something about myself, I would think, in that. What else?
There's this danger of self-deception.
Yeah, so once more, you know, the other one was don't think of yourself more highly than you ought. Here you could be deceiving yourself and all. So to be careful about those things. So if he thinks he's something when he's nothing, he deceives himself. That's just kind of like I'm just off base entirely about who I am. And I need to be careful about that. And then, of course, as you said, the test is on work. What's interesting to me about where the location of this, look back over to verses 1 and 2. This statement follows the context of what kind of circumstance?
Being overtaken in a trespass.
Who?
A man.
Yeah, somebody else, not you, by the way. If you look at it carefully, it would matter to us too, but if you look at it, the idea is, brothers, if anyone's caught in the transgression, you who are spiritual, I'm addressing you, you need to restore them in a spirit of gentleness and keep watch on yourself, lest you too be tempted. There's another kind of, hey, I need to know what my limitations are. You know, I need to know when I should be especially careful in some situation. Then bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. And then it goes on to talk about the things that are here. It seems like it's in the context of the very kind of work that elders would be doing, though, as we'll talk about this first in the next lesson. This is something I think everybody who's spiritually minded is expected to be engaged in doing. But in doing it, you need to be careful. You need to understand your own strengths and weaknesses. And finally, one more passage. Here's Hebrews 5, 12 through 14. Go ahead and turn it. I'm not so sure that this one is as easy to pull out and say, well, here's what it's talking about as far as self-assessment. But if the idea in our study is we want to know where we are right now, what are our strengths and weaknesses, there is something here that would say something about our future development, how we would use that, and how we would recognize where we are right now. What do you see in verses 12 and 14 that might speak to this idea of assessing our strengths and weaknesses with a goal in mind of developing the system? Ryan, you look like you do.
I think that's Caleb in there laughing. So oh. It's fine.
he's developing in there, man.
The concept of milk versus solid food, and those who aren't developed aren't in need of the milk.
Okay.
And those who are developed eat the solid food, and so that's what we strive for, is to be able to eat the solid food and not just be milk drinkers.
Is there a sense of a challenge here that you should be progressing to where you can handle these more difficult things, right? Which I think should suggest I need to know that I'm not doing that now. And how does he start off this section? What should they be? And why? What's kind of the key mark of why they ought to be able now to be teachers? There's been enough time. So the idea is that if you had time, you would develop. You would be able to do some things that you weren't able to do before. So it's not just this concept of self-assessment. It's the concept of self-development. I can change. I can be made into somebody new, which again is back to the idea of, I think spiritual leadership is something that's learned. Yeah, you could have a lot of natural abilities, but that's just kind of part of that Romans 12. Figure out what some of your maybe more natural abilities are, but you still should be developing more fully into being able to do things. By this time, he says you ought to be teachers. And then as far as those who are mature, the definition, I think it's one of the more important passages in the New Testament, that you would have your powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Not everything is as clear as thou shalt not do whatever. I mean, there are some things that are right and wrong. It takes some powers of discernment to figure out, you know what, that is not a good thing to do. And if you keep doing it, it's going to be a sinful thing. Or, you know, you can think through those sort of things. Well, that's for one who's mature, who's grown, who's developed. And so in this study, we want to spend some time thinking about how to kind of grow and develop. Right.
I mean, it seems like, too, like you have to find ways to practice those things, like, you know, train by constant practice. Like, you have to look for opportunities
right.
to practice that in order to create that growth.
Very good. I think that's exactly right. Okay, so what we're going to do, not tonight, and I think what we'll do is probably give you really till the end of our study to work your way through this. I handed this out on Sunday, right? So those of you that were here on Sunday, first of all, the things that are in yellow, I told you that it was subject to change. Marty and I talked a little bit about this form and thought that there are some skills we've talked about in this study that maybe aren't reflected on the form. And I tried to think of some. I put three extra ones in. I'll explain what they are in just a minute. He and I really didn't have much of a chance to review some of this modification to it. So I don't know if I captured everything he had in mind in that, but hopefully these three highlighted things are some helpful improvements. If you got the form on Sunday and you worked with it, this doesn't really change it materially. But what I'm going to give to you tonight is a little bit different. So here's what we tried to do kind of years ago. We came up with this chart, this way of mathematically weighing out something, as a means of trying to determine, well, what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses, and not just the standpoint of what they are, but also what do others perceive them to be. Why should I care about what other Christians perceive my strengths to be if I'm going to be a spiritual leader? Why should I care? I don't care what you think about my spiritual leadership. Why should I care?
Because you're leading them.
You're going to lead them. And their perception of your abilities and other things does matter. Now, again, be careful. The idea isn't I'm going to improve your perception of me. I'm already pretty good as it is. The problem is you're perceiving the wrong thing. If I can change your perception, then you know, there's progress, right? That's not the idea at all. But recognizing what others may see as being your weaknesses could be very valuable. And so we're going to help one another in that. And so I'm going to give you, I've divided the class up into four groups, okay? And so you're going to be asked, if you're willing, you don't have to do this, but if you're willing to assess the others that are part of your group, that'd be great. If you only want to assess yourself as just an exercise, that would be fine as well. But here's the reason why we did it. We tried to take, down here below are all those qualifications that are listed in 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1, and all, and kind of grouped them together with what at the top are really more of what you might think of as the skills, the abilities that an elder would have. Or those broader character traits as they work out in terms of the work that an elder would do. So, for example, spiritual interests. Well, that's got to be the most important thing in life. Your zeal, your devotion, the priorities that you have. Are you putting God first? Do others see you as making decisions based on the right kind of priorities, as the Scriptures talk about? And then I added the idea of the willingness to make personal sacrifice. You can't do this work unless you're willing to make some sacrifices of personal time and sometimes money and other, but especially time. If you're not willing to do that, then you really wouldn't be able to do the work. And so assessing somebody in that regard is important. And then Bible wisdom, of course. There are qualifications that talk about things that would suggest you need to know the Scriptures. But think about it in a more practical way of where do you really need to know that? Well, it might be things like controversial topics. Do you have an established position? Have you spent enough time in the Scriptures? You kind of know what's truth and what's not. The ability from a wisdom standpoint to kind of apply that reasoning ability, or the ability I added here to apply biblical principles to real life problems. There's somebody's situation, there might not be a single passage that's on point to it, but there's a lot of principles out there, and do I know how to apply those and talk about that? Life and family stability, what do people see about you and your family, your involvement with them, how you handle your finances, your work, your other conflicts that might relate to your family? People-oriented. I mean, look at all the qualifications that would be along that line. But it would show itself as kindness and compassion, non-partiality. Can you get along with all kinds of people? And are you, I added this, able to provide persuasive counsel? I'm thinking of that as, can you deliver tough news to somebody in a loving way? You know what? The only way you're ever going to make this better is you've got to give up this. You've got to do this. That type of ability. And then your own personal strength, just kind of the ability to bear with difficulty and discouragement and tough circumstances and all. So your security, your confidence, your resistance to discouragement. And then the last one, you know, public persona sounds, again, sounds kind of worldly, but the elders have to be able sometimes to address the flock as a whole and to be able to convey certain things to a larger group. How do they come across? So maybe not every elder has to have a lot of speaking skills and stuff in terms of a larger group, but sooner or later you're going to be with a group in which you need to be able to be persuasive, non-threatening, give a positive image and those kinds of things. So anyway, we did that. We weighted some of them a little differently. You know, spiritual interest, not going to have anything less than the top weight. They're weighted either 3, 4, or 5. And then what we're asking you to do, if you fill it out, put a 1 to 10. Now, in your mind, the highest anybody may ever get is a 7. Somebody else, the lowest anybody will ever have is an 8. That's all right. Whatever your scale is, it'll work out in regard to why it's worthwhile to have more than one person kind of doing it. So I'm gonna hand these out to you, and then we'll have a couple of weeks, maybe not quite that, to work on them. And I would suggest again, if you have any hesitation, you don't want to do it and all, that's fine. We were in a church up in New York recently. And they wanted to do this, but a couple of men were like, I want to know what people say about me, but I don't want to assess anybody else. Okay. So I sent him what they said about him, but nothing else. And then somebody else just didn't want to participate at all. That made fine. No problem. it's all anonymous. No one will ever know what you said about how poor Jake's public persona is. Okay? So, I tell you what. Why don't, if each one of you will come see me after class, I'll give you the sheet that has your name on it. Because I think it'll just take, we'll eat up a little bit too much time if we try to do this. Yeah. Is that okay?
You want me to do it while you're teaching?
Yeah, perhaps. Let me do this part first. So, last thing I want to do is I want to go through these two case studies. I'm going to divide you up. Anybody got a copy of it? I'm happy to give you a copy. All right. So the Glenn James across. You guys are all Donnie Deacons. And Steve and Matthew, you guys are all George Goodwins. And I'd like you to discuss the answer here for a couple of minutes to the person next to you. I think you can figure out somebody who's next to you. So take a minute. Donnie, if you will find somebody next to you to discuss this with, and George's. Yeah, so you two, George's. Read through this. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes, and we're going to go through at least one of these two. And so, George's, your basic question, this first one, what questions would you like to ask the elders of this church? And then the second is the advice you'd have for George. And that, what questions would you like to ask the elders? That's not you as George, that's you as you. Okay? If you were trying to help give advice to George, what would you want to ask the elders and find out? And then you can tell us what your advice might be to George. Do you understand the distinction? I don't think the Donnie questions are as confusing. All right, here we go. All right, so a couple of things. How does that statement go? Any resemblance to actual persons or circumstances is purely coincidental. I read these so long ago, I have no idea if it was based on somebody real or not. Somehow, I divided it up. I think there are 14 Donnies and 10 Georges. So we're gonna see if we can work our way through Donnie's circumstance. And then we might put a few minutes at the beginning of class Sunday if we need to speak a little bit about George's and all. If it has, helps us jump in Sunday into the idea of actually beginning to work on self-development and get a little bit off of the self-assessment side. So you Donnie folks over here, what do you think? How likely is it that he is going to be asked to serve as an elder?
Likely.
Yeah, about as highly likely as possible, right? A lot of things would say no, maybe. I mean, he's a little bit young. Only one of his children has been baptized. But what leads you to the conclusion it's pretty likely he's going to be asked?
Feedback he's getting.
All right, that's one.
The elders later.
I think that's the bigger part. And how many elders?
There's only two.
And that kind of a circumstance just says they're going to work really hard. You know, Donnie might be not much of a candidate to serve as an elder in some other circumstances, but right now he's looking really good for lots of reasons. And if it did happen that he's asked to serve, regardless of his hesitation, how easy would it be for him to say no in that situation? It's going to be easy?
No.
I mean, I think, you know, so, they may not do this, what did it say, like for 6 more months or something, it's coming up later on in the year, I think is the way that it says, but if he has 6 months or whatever it is, he needs to begin to think, this is very likely I'm going to be asked. I need to be thinking about, well, what's your advice? What did you come up with? It feels like a little bit of a sense of urgency here. What did you have in mind that's come to you? You got to help me.
Really just to think about it, self-assess, you know.
Okay.
Study is prayer.
We thought of just writing down the reasons for the gut feeling, like why do you feel unqualified? And
okay.
Then you can take those reasons and find what you believe is wise counsel in others, not just the people saying you're definitely the next elder.
Yeah, I like that. So, you know, gut feeling says, every time I think about this, my stomach starts to hurt. But it doesn't necessarily tell you why. And so maybe you're spending a little bit of time, well, let's actually write this out. Let's think about it specifically. What is it that's making you think you wouldn't be able to do this or whatever? And what other advice do you have?
I would advise you not to do it because of the pressure of not having an eldership.
Okay.
That's secondary to the fact is why is he hesitant in rowing an eldership?
Yeah, so I'm one of those members that's just desperate to be sure we don't lose the eldership, so I'm going to really put the high pressure on him and stuff. But you're going to help him to kind of think through from a look. If you're going to do this work, is this what you're saying? If you're going to end up doing it, it needs to be because of some valid reasons to serve in that capacity, not just simply because you feel pressure or, you know. Yeah, I think that's probably good advice for you to think.
Don't you think that the two elders who know of the situation should be working with not just Donnie, but anybody else in the congregation?
Yeah.
They don't lose the eldership.
Okay, so they haven't apparently come to Donnie. Is there anything wrong with him being presumptuous enough, based on kind of what he's heard, to go to them and say, I think there's a chance I might be asked, and here are my concerns. What do you think about my abilities and quality, or what else might he want to quiz them about?
Why are you leaving?
I don't understand elders that leave places, but there are very valid reasons at times to do that. But you hope that it's not, yeah, my grandkids are calling me. But maybe let's just say that, you know, his family really needs him somewhere else, and he's hanging on. He really should have left for family reasons a year ago, but he's hanging on because of this circumstance and all. I'd kind of like to know that part too. That may change your viewpoint of some of this. But what else would you want to know from them as elders? Remember, what you don't know is they didn't have a class like this. You know, they haven't gone through the case study of Sophia and Jerome and all. You may want to know a little bit.
What could he do to prepare to serve in that capacity someday in the future?
What about a day in the future, 6 months, George? I know you're one of the Georges.
Yeah, either way.
But it's good. See, he's helping.
Whatever time frame it is.
Isn't that right? I mean, let's say that he's got 6 months. Is there something he can be working on and doing? Do you think there's some doctrinal things that church might be facing right now that it might be good that he's kind of studied that out? Do you think that there's a circumstance or two that the elders might feel comfortable sharing with him and telling him? He may already know what they are, right? He may want to say, "Hey, if I'm not asked, I'm not asked, but I'm concerned. I want to develop." I think trying to quiz and find out some of that, you'd be surprised how much more prepared he may feel if he's had those kinds of conversations. Who else should he be talking to, though, besides the...
His wife and kids.
Oh, you think? Yeah, he really should. You know, if anything, maybe is going to say, look, Donnie, no matter how much pressure there is, back to Carl's point, you don't need to do it just simply because the church is pushing you. It may be his wife, you know. Maybe, you know, her sound-mindedness about, hey, we have this family issue and you're not going to be able to do both at this point in time. On the other hand, if she's ready to make sacrifices too, do you think that will buoy his confidence and his ability to prepare himself for this difficult thing?
I believe it's Marty. I remember doing a sermon on
being an elder, and talking about that virtually everyone that was ever appointed as an elder had the feeling of, I'm not particularly qualified.
I'm a boy trying to do a man's job.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I guess the question would be, if I was Donnie Deacon, this is how I feel. If I speak to them and say, is this just my own, you know, reticence, my own fear of being imperfect, which it seems like everybody feels, or is there merit to this and because of specific things? And as somebody who has an eye on the block, could you tell me what those things are that I am lacking?
And this is one where, you know, the idea of desiring the work, he needs to begin to think about that now. I mean, far be it from that day coming where they just sort of like, they actually ask him. A little bit back to Carl's point, if he's thought about this for the last 6 months before that leads up to, he's much more prepared to make a sound decision about this than kind of, oh, I don't even want to think about it. And then one day, oh, you got to do this or the eldership is gone. Well, that's a lot different than if you put that time into it. All right, we'll come back to some of this. And so you can either get it now if you want to, if you think you've got time, or I can give it to you after church. So let's...